Good morning. This is Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm your host, Hannah Colton, a reporter with KUNM's Public Health New Mexico project. Have you ever dreamed of being a plumber, a seamstress, a cobbler, or a machinist? From the film industry to culinary arts, technical training programs and apprenticeships can help people find careers without paying for a four-year degree. Vocational ed is our topic this morning, and we want to hear from you. The number to call, 277-5866. What kind of career and technical education would be helpful for you? How accessible are these opportunities to job seekers of different ages, genders, and backgrounds? Give us a call this hour or email letstalk@kunm.org. Again, the number 277-5866. We're talking about a wide range of training programs this morning, and these go well beyond shop class or home ec or exploratory, as you may have known it back in high school. I want to welcome in the studio Jessica Nojek, Executive Director of Mission Graduate at United Way of Central New Mexico.
Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for being here. How is your program working to expand career and technical education programs?
We have a goal at Mission Graduate that we worked with our community to create 60,000 new college degrees and certificates by the year 2020. And certificates are obviously a big part of the pool of credentials that people can receive to continue to stay competitive in the workforce. But apprenticeships are a big part, as well as other CTE pathways, in helping people with economic mobility and be more successful in our community and in life. So we are fully supportive of that. And one of our biggest strategies focuses around college and career readiness. And so we engage with the community and employers around adult transitions into college, because we don't want to forget those adults, those comebackers that might also see apprenticeship as a way to gain that economic mobility in their life.
Comebackers. I like
that.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And we will hear more about that United Way program. I want to welcome also in the studio this morning, Chaz Robles, Director of the Ancestral Lands Program. Good morning.
Good morning.
So, Chaz, what kinds of skills are you teaching in that program?
So the Ancestral Lands Program, we work with Native American and Indigenous young people, and it's an on-the-job training and certification program. We complete natural resource protection and conservation projects. So we're training our members in trail building, construction, survey and design, chainsaw maintenance, operations, safety, herbicide application, fence construction, wilderness first aid certification, various certifications in the conservation and natural resource protection field.
And it's a conservation corps program, right? So you work with teenagers through like young adults?
Correct. So our conservation corps programs are for 17-year-olds to 30-year-olds. And then we have some younger programs for elementary and middle school youth to get them involved and interested in the field of outdoor recreation and conservation, kind of like a feeder program for our high school and adult programs.
And how do you recruit, or how do young folks find your program?
So our program, as I mentioned, we work with Native American and Indigenous young people. Excuse me. We're in community. So we were founded in the Pueblo of Acoma in 2008. And since then, we've grown to partner with the Pueblo of Zuni, the Navajo Nation with an office in Gallup, the Hopi Nation, and then we have an urban program here serving urban Native American and Indigenous young people in Albuquerque. So our community ties are strong, and that's where most of our recruitment happens. Excuse me. Word of mouth from past participants, their younger brothers, sisters, and cousins, their friends. And then we work a lot with the local middle schools and high schools and college programs as well, workforce development programs to recruit.
You're listening to Let's Talk New Mexico. We're speaking with directors of Ancestral Lands Program and a United Way Mission Graduate Program. What set you on the path to learning your trade? What do you like most about your career? What are you proud of? Give us a call this morning, 277-5866. We would love to hear from you. And so, Jessica, what are some of those community partners that you work with?
So we have very strong relationships with all of our school superintendents, as well as our the employer community. Employers are very important to this work, and we really want to find stronger on-ramps for them into our schools. So that would connect with CTE as well, because a lot of CTE students...
Career technical education.
Yes.
We'll be saying that one a lot this hour, CTE.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Career technical ed. You know, students are going to gain a lot of experience doing internships. So that, or any type of career experience, whether it's light to heavy touch. So we really engage with the schools. Community Schools is also a big partner with us, and we're actually working with them on kind of creating a stronger model within four of their high schools to help employers come in, but also support the school staff and being able to receive those opportunities and support the students to engage in them, to prepare them for them, because there's a lot of work that goes into that and understanding the professional world versus what you deal with in school every day. But that's going to help set you up for success, and it's something that's really important and needed.
I want to bring into the conversation now State Representative Cheryl Williams-Stapleton, who is the coordinator and director of career technical education at Albuquerque Public Schools, joining us by phone. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for being with us. So you've been at APS for more than 20 years. What's new there as far as career and technical education?
In career and technical education in the Albuquerque Public Schools, in terms of new versus our regular vocational education programs that we normally have had in the past, we have biomed, we have STEM courses, we have engineering, we have computer-aided drafting courses, and we have film, video, and information technology classes that are moving forward within the Albuquerque Public Schools.
And this legislative session, which ended last month, you sponsored legislation to fund a 7-year pilot project for CTE. What will that look like for districts that eventually apply and are able to get that funding?
Well, I think it's a great, great opportunity for schools to be able to pilot a work-based learning activity in career technical education, in relation to hands-on classes related to vocational education, and specifically having high-quality career technical education programs in their schools and in their school districts. This type of 7-year pilot project gives us outcomes, gives us academic growth in regards to career tech, and would be able to tell the PED as well as each of the school districts participating where their students are going, what their interests are, what they would be looking forward to in terms of higher education, and also in terms of workforce and workforce development.
And Albuquerque Public Schools has about 30,000, you told me, 30,000 students involved in CTE, which is about a third. It's a big number, and or at least taking those CTE courses. And the data shows that those students who take CTE courses or who concentrate in career technical ed have a higher graduation rate. Why do you think that is?
Because those students are taking courses that they love, that they have interest in. Courses that they feel that, for example, if they're interested in a career field, a particular career field, at an early age in high school, they have an opportunity to be aware of what they're supposed to be taking, what should come out of them at the end of the road. For example, whether or not they need to go on to college and take additional classes, or whether or not from high school, they're able to have an industry certification certificate that allows them to go straight into the world of work. And so with those activities and those involvement, these students then can say, I like what I'm doing. And so with interest in that, they're able to stay in school, not drop out, and then move on to graduation because they have a goal in mind.
I see. And caller Nora from Santa Fe is a teacher at Santa Fe High School. Her comment was she thinks technical education should be an equal and viable option for high school kids, not stigmatized as it is now because aiming for college doesn't work for all students. What do you think, Cheryl Williams Stapleton on the line here? What do you think about that stigmatization? Why is that stigma as strong as it used to be? And how are you working with that?
It's going down. I don't think it's as strong. In some areas, it might be. And the reason for that is basically a few years ago, the state of New Mexico chose to put forward a plan specifically pushing for college readiness only and pushing for students to go to college. And so many across the state, many of our courses of vocational education, now career technical education is the term, many of those courses were ignored. Students couldn't participate because the authorities say we must now have courses that lead to college, and students had to take them. Many of these courses are considered elective courses and went by the wayside. And ultimately, students were dropping out of school or not taking these type of courses, their interests, and then the graduation rate was low. But now we're going forward and saying both can work together. Many of our students who are taking these type of classes are now going on to junior colleges or to CNM or to UNM. We have students at, for example, La Cueva High School that is taking engineering classes at La Cueva and still taking the same engineering classes that is being taught at UNM through a dual credit program at La Cueva. We have the same type of courses at Valley High School, and we have we have Atrisco Heritage with a great film, video, and technology program for our students. Those students didn't say they're not going to college. Those students' hope is that they would be in the field of an area that would give them high-quality programs, high-quality, high-demand jobs as a result of taking these classes in all these high schools.
So students are actually seeing and understanding that various things can lead to that good job and that steady pay and not just one thing or the other.
You're correct. The opportunity now avails itself because not only in New Mexico, not only across the state in New Mexico, but nationally, there's a revitalization of career technical education classes because over the years, those involved from the national level to the state level to the county levels to the regional levels, individuals are seeing an opportunity where our students are excelling as a result of taking these courses.
We do have to go to a break pretty soon here, but I want to take one listener call first. Daisy is calling from Albuquerque. Good morning, Daisy.
Hey, Hannah. How's it going?
Hey, you're on the air.
Awesome. Hello. I was just calling because I think this is a really excellent topic, and I'm someone who graduated from college but ended up going into a trade. And I was really just musing about how increasing access to trade skills for students will not only benefit them and their career paths, but really strengthens our local economy by keeping really valuable skills here at home and creating a community in which we can exchange those skills with one another. So I'm excited to see all of the programs and see how they keep affecting our community.
Absolutely. That impact on the local economy is a good point. And I just want to ask, what trade did you decide to go into after doing a different thing in college?
It was a bit of a road. I spent some time organic farming a couple of years. And at this point, I'm a massage therapist. So I definitely value learning skills and trade and sharing them with people.
All right. Thank you so much for calling, Daisy.
Yeah, thank you for your programming, Hannah.
Let's go to a quick break. The number to call this morning is 277-5866, or you can tweet the hashtag #LetsTalkNM. This is Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM. We'll be back in a minute.
The law firm of Rothstein Donatelli is committed to supporting KUNM, representing Native American tribes, people facing criminal charges, civil rights plaintiffs, and victims of sexual abuse. Info at RothsteinLaw.com.
KUNM thanks Independent Vehicle Service for its support, just because it's good to have an independent dealership alternative. On the web at IVSABQ.com.
Concert highlights that you can't hear anyplace else. Conversations, personal insights, and reflections from the finest musicians of our time. Updates on what's what and who's who in the world of classical music. And, of course, our weekly game, The Piano Puzzler with Bruce Adolph. I'm Fred Child. Join me for APM's Performance Today.
Weekday mornings at 9 on KUNM.
This is Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm Hannah Colton. Our focus today, career and technical education and vocational education. Are you working on becoming a skilled tradesperson in New Mexico? What are the barriers to getting into that occupation? Does your kid's middle or high school offer CTE programs? And how well do you think that prepares students for after graduation? Give us a call. We'd like to hear from you. 277-5866. You can also interact with us on Twitter with the hashtag #LetsTalkNM. So Cheryl Williams Stapleton is on the line, CTE coordinator at Albuquerque Public Schools. Cheryl, we know still that many trades are still heavily male-dominated. It's mostly men working currently in those fields, some of them at least. Are you concerned that certain demographics of students, current high school students or even middle school students, will get funneled into those kinds of vocational tracks and others won't, or that certain students will get funneled into vocational tracks instead of college? I mean, what's the balance of encouraging but not stereotyping?
No, maybe years ago, maybe some time ago, that was a topic of what teachers do in decisions for students. However, in Albuquerque Public Schools, especially in Korean technical education classes, teachers selecting those pathways that leads to post-secondary through the student surveys, to input from students saying these are the courses that they're interested in taking. This is the pathway that they're interested in doing. And then teachers then look at the relevant career technical content that aligns secondary and post-secondary education together on behalf of those students. And that's how those students sign up for those courses. We don't just say, okay, today, this year, we're going to teach next year a course that doesn't involve input from students. So in that case, you have young women and young men both signing up for the courses because that's what they want to take. That is their interest, which establishes the opportunity for students to not only go on to taking the dual credit even at their schools, but creating an opportunity for them to have soft skills and social skills and to do an integration of career courses with academic contents. In addition, it leads these students to an opportunity to an industry-recognized credential. And that credential then takes them to post-secondary level where their opportunities avail itself for them to have an associate degree or a bachelor's degree. And then, in addition to that, these students also have an opportunity to advance outside of the school system by having Albuquerque Public Schools having established partnerships among the local jobs and the local businesses that build a partnership, then students have apprenticeship. Not only apprenticeship, they have internship opportunities where they take their courses in the morning and in the afternoon, mostly seniors, they're out working in a field that they feel that they want to go into. So by the time they leave high school, they know what they're going to do or they know where they want to go. So it's not a matter of saying you must take this or only boys can take this. I can tell you, though, some of the courses, the majority of the time, boys sign up for them if they are courses like automotive technology. But if there are courses like biomed that we do have, and video and audio and film and information technology courses, architecture courses, we have lots of young ladies participating in those classes.
All right. Cheryl Williams-Stapleton, Coordinator of Career Technical Education at APS, thank you so much for being with us this morning.
You're most certainly welcome, and I hope that many of the school districts, especially rural areas, would now participate in taking an opportunity to do a career technical education class and create a pathway for students across the state with this House Bill 91 and the opportunity for students to know all about vocational education, career tech courses.
That's the pilot project.
Yes, it is. And it's for 7 years. We're hoping as years go by and the outcomes of the students would lead them into having more participation across the state.
All right. Thank you so much, Cheryl. And we have Chaz Robles, Program Director of the Ancestral Lands Program, in the studio here. What would you like to add about as far as what students or what young people are encouraged to do what?
Yeah, that's a great point. Achieving gender balance has been a challenge that we found in our program. We strive to have equal amounts of young women and young men participating in our program. Conservation and natural resource protection being a historically male-dominated field. And then some of the communities that we're working in, too, there's some cultural stigma that can be attached to young women, say, wielding chainsaws and going out and doing forest thinning projects or invasive species removal projects. So something that we've done is to create all-women crews. We found some great success. We've had an all-women's chainsaw crew based out of the Navajo Nation working in the Fort Defiance Agency, removing Russian olives down there. And it was amazing to see them. The camaraderie they had and going out there and getting the work done. Southwest Conservation Corps, which Ancestral Lands is a program of, out of our Salida, Colorado office, there was an all-women's wildland firefighting crew. So again, another very strongly male-dominated field, but creating those single identity programs to encourage and create safe space and comfortable space for, in this case, young women to come in, get the certifications and qualifications and experience that they need to go into the field of wildland firefighting, all within a very safe environment, inclusive environment, was one of the real ways that we found to overcome some of these stigma and challenges that we find in these fields that have been male-dominated.
That's really inspiring, and it strikes me that there's these two ideas about it. One, which is like girls, women, or you know, say Native American students in a white dominated field, like lean in, push hard, just break in. That's the one philosophy. And then the other is the sort of what you're saying is, well, no, there has to actually be a safer space for people to feel comfortable.
And I don't think it's one or the other. It's both, because there's some folks that are going to feel comfortable.
Sure.
In either field, right? So it's creating more opportunity, more inclusivity. And that's how our program was actually created. As you mentioned, conservation being a very white-dominated program, we had our program in Durango, Colorado that was engaging Native Americans, and there was a high turnover rate because of a lot of barriers that were in place. So we still have a lot of Native Americans coming to our Durango program and having success there. We have our program as well. We're trying to create as many opportunities as possible.
I want to welcome another guest this morning. On the line is Esteban Rico Ramirez, who's an apprentice at Adelaide Alterations and Tailoring and also works in the film industry in the costume department. Good morning, Rico.
Good morning.
Thanks for being with us. So you've been listening in the conversation for a bit here. Will you tell us, did you always want to make clothing? I mean, how did you get into that line of work?
I think that my interest in clothing kind of stemmed for a little bit more of an attention to skateboarding. It was a lot about the culture, about what you wore. It's a little bit probably parallel with the idea of music. You wore the bands that you wanted, even if you were not necessarily into just punk rock and spikes and leather, displays on vests. You would also represent the same if you're into hip hop and into something like East Coast to West Coast. So it kind of started from there. I think I just grew into a space where I just started wanting things that weren't available on the racks or I didn't see in front of me. So it was just kind of the natural creative DIY nature of, well, then I'll just make it.
What's a really cool thing you've made or worked on so far, either in your tailoring apprenticeship or in the film industry?
It's pretty good. That's a pretty good question. I would say like right now, recently, I've been having a lot of fun with distressing. So dyeing and aging is a really interesting department because you're taking something brand new and making it look like it's had 20 years of wear on it. So that's one thing I really enjoy, I think mostly because it takes me out of my element of fine tuning and trying to make everything look even and clean and detailed. It's a lot more of just like throwing it and letting it have like a wabi-sabi, it is what it is kind of nature to it. But to say like a favorite thing that I've done, I think the very first project was like probably the most impactful to me. I learned how to make coveralls from a company called the Rational Dress Society that are really trying to eradicate the ideas of sizes as like you're a petite, you're a large, you're an extra large, and no, instead you're an alpha, you're an omega, you're a stratus. Like they just make new names and everything has its own fit, its own cut, and it's all unique to you. And that was one of the biggest things I think I learned, that you can ignore boundaries of what you're supposed to do. Even though you can work with them, you can make them your own.
Radical tailoring. I like that. We are talking about vocational ed apprenticeships today on the program. This is Let's Talk New Mexico. Give us a call, 277-5866. How important is vocational education to New Mexico's economy? Are you torn between a job training program and a four-year college degree? What's pulling you in either direction? If you've been an apprentice, what's the value of that training? Again, the number 277-5866. And Rico Ramirez on the line. How did you land that tailor's apprenticeship?
That kind of happened in an extremely serendipitous way. I was on hold to get a job in a particular production that was here in town. And literally, I think within the very 24 hours of me finding out that job opportunity, sadly, wasn't available anymore, I got a message from this tailor via Instagram where I kind of operate out of under the name The Mop. And he just kind of was a fan and watching what I was doing. And he thought maybe this was a good point for him to reach out and see if maybe we could collaborate with the idea. If it was a copacetic environment and relationship between us, we would potentially have an apprenticeship on our hands and eventually an occupation, a part-time job, full-time job available. And so it kind of came to me in the way I needed it the most, because I had just so much availability, but not really the clear idea of where I wanted to place that into. And so it was kind of a shock because I've been always looking for a opportunity like this. But kind of to go back to what we were discussing a little earlier is this idea of the male to female dominant fields. There wasn't a really strong climate for me to find the stuff that I wanted to do for males, because everything was usually based upon an idea of quilting, maybe. And it was a little bit more feminine based in comparison to me trying to find a person who's making suits or having a strong idea of like the form and cut of like men's pants that actually are worn by the person making them. So I think the whole thing kind of worked amazingly for me to jump into this opportunity that I was really available for without knowing I was looking for its actual reality.
That's an interesting example of social media, your Instagram presence being really like a jumping off point too.
Exactly. I think it's kind of the way it goes for a small business, an individual, an artist especially. The idea of having print or video be the only ways of communicating is just kind of out the door. And now you get to have that same ability to do video and photo and Word on your own, in your own hands, on these devices that everyone has in their pockets almost at 24/7. And it makes it really amazing for this whole stage that everyone has a voice. However, that's a very bittersweet idea that I can be one of thousands of people creating clothing, and it's really hard to find me over so many others around me, as well as to find the really good ones that might be next to you. One notable person is Happy Loco, Jeremy Salazar, who makes amazing work. He's finally getting the recognition, and he's coming out of Albuquerque as well, but on the climates of the West Coast and East Coast, because it's who's wearing his clothing. But it's hard to believe that this person is just here next to me at the skate park, doing his own clothing as well.
And Rico, you've been making your own clothing for several years, and then doing this apprenticeship and this costume department work more recently. What's your long-term goal for your career or goals?
I would say easily I want to stay within the realms of New Mexico. And that kind of tying into a little bit earlier of bringing in more of the workforce locally to support this industry. I've always just kind of wanted to do the things that felt right and passionate at the moment. I'm usually a pretty solid metaphoric person to say, like, wherever the wind takes me. But I know that the directions that have come from that mentality have been some of the biggest successes I've had in my life. They've taken me out of the country. They've taken me into countless opportunities that were just kind of priceless, be it with clothing or other mediums that I've worked with. But I think right now it seems like the MOP is going to be what it wants to be. It was always kind of an ability to be creative and to share something with someone that really needed the help, needed the service, wanted to make their favorite piece of clothing last forever.
And that's your custom tailoring business.
Correct.
Yeah.
And to take it further with the idea of the film industry, and especially in the costume department, it's more so the security of a career that I think so many people would like to have, just to have the ability to know that you don't have to stress out as a freelancer every single month to how am I going to pay rent? How am I going to pay the utility bills? How am I going to pay for my phone? I always wanted that security. I was over having to make those stresses for several years. And so now having this opportunity in front of me with the film industry in an amazing, fertile area that it is now in New Mexico, it's really one of those situations for me that it's only going to kind of supplement both sides of my tailoring work personally, as well as my operation as doing tons of different avenues and parts of a costume department. And so it kind of is a little bit vague to say that, like, I'm just really happy to be where I'm at and I'm excited to look forward to the future, but I'm not really getting tied up with what it looks like. It's kind of like a mirage to me. I really am just happy with the direction I'm going, not getting wrapped up about where I'm coming from point A to point B. I'm just enjoying the travel as it turns into B.
That does sound like a good journey. And you did grow up in Albuquerque and went to public and private schools here. What's your advice for a young person in Albuquerque who is wanting to have a creative career or job?
Oh, that's pretty much the best part about, I think, what Albuquerque, and not even just what Albuquerque, New Mexico has to offer. Work with your community. Work with the people around you. We're one of the warmest environments of people that I hear constantly, someone from the East Coast, someone from anywhere in the country. And like, I just showed up here because of a partner and we ended up breaking up and I'm sticking around and it's 8 years, or yeah, our car broke down and I just loved it, so I stayed. It's a place where it just brings so many walks of life of people in different spaces of their career, of their creativity and so on. I would definitely say start looking around the people who are next to you and just start talking about what you're interested in. Your vibe will always attract your tribe. And I can definitely say that what I do only works because of the other person wearing, believing, and wanting to be a part of the culture that I'm trying to create, be it in the film industry or be it within my own personal ideas of creativities. So I definitely agree in this sense of, like, think locally before you try thinking of, like, getting outside of the state and getting outside of the country and being this forefront of a person, you got to understand that you need to blast off of a stage before you can just jump into the stratosphere. You need to create a little bit of a landing pad for you to actually learn how to jump off of it.
All right. Rico Ramirez, owner of The Mop, thank you so much for your time this morning.
Thank you.
We do need to go to a quick break. The number to call in this morning is 277-5866. Is there enough respect in our culture for people who work in a trade? Did you start going to college after high school and then leave college for vocational ed? Let us know. 277-5866. This is Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM. Back in a minute.
Each week, New Dimensions explores the social, political, scientific, environmental, and spiritual frontiers with some of today's foremost social innovators, thinkers, scientists, and creative artists.
Hello, I'm Ken Pelletier, author of Change Your Genes, Change Your Life. Next time on New Dimensions, I'll be talking about creating optimal health with the new science of epigenetics.
Saturday mornings at 6 on KUNM.
Skip the hassle of finding a buyer for that unwanted car. Donate it to KUNM and turn it into great radio. Or maybe you've got a truck, boat, or an RV you don't want anymore. Donate it to KUNM. It's very easy. It qualifies you for KUNM membership, and it helps KUNM a lot. Call today, 888-KUNM-CAR. That's 888-586-6227.
You're listening to Let's Talk New Mexico on KUNM. I'm your host, Hannah Colton. This morning, we're talking about vocational training programs, apprenticeships, CTE. If you specialize in a trade or craft, how did you get started? How did you develop the confidence and the network to make money that way? What advice would you give to someone trying to break into that line of work in New Mexico? You can email us, letstalk@kunm.org, or call 277-5866. We've got about 18 minutes left in the program this morning. We've got an email comment from Ginger of Albuquerque. She's a career counselor at Lutheran Family Services, helping young refugees here find careers. She says it's tough for that population to access vocational programs because of language barriers and other issues. She thinks it's important to make it easier for those folks to have opportunities so they can succeed here. I want to put that idea to Jessica Nojek here in the studio, Executive Director of Mission Graduate at United Way of Central New Mexico. How do these programs become more accessible to, say, folks who have a language barrier, who don't speak English yet?
That's a tough one. We actually have a public ally in our office who has been doing some work in trying to help refugees. They have such... They're at the, like, what we call the launch pad of barriers. You know what I mean? So how do you, like, I can't drive. How do you even get a driver's license? That's a huge, huge barrier. So I guess that's definitely a tough question to answer. I would like to say that one of our biggest partners is Department of Workforce Solutions and the Central Workforce Board. And with that said, we actually have a coach in-house at the Workforce Connection office at Mountain Road that tries to help people go back to school and help them with that warm handoff to the system, because sometimes it's very daunting, especially if you have a language barrier on where to go. Also about around financial aid, and we can help counsel them. But they might also qualify for other funding streams within the office that can be there and help support them and find those resources that they need within the school to be successful. Because there are resources there. It's just about the knowing. And that's the piece that I also wanted to just bring up really quickly. I'm so grateful to hear from Rico today and even Daisy, who's calling in. But we know what we know. And especially if you're a refugee or if you're a young person who kind of grows up isolated and your parents are working two jobs and you're helping with childcare, you don't know what's out there. And so I want to invite, like, Rico, who's just amazingly articulate about these opportunities, or Chaz or Daisy, to go to a school, contact us and see how we can help you sit there and talk to a class just during their advisory period about what you've learned. Because when they hear this inspiration, positive adult relationships create great resiliency among our young people, but can also help those that feel isolated because of their language as a refugee.
And that's a great point, is that mentorship sort of becomes the point of a lot of these. Chaz, how do you see that play out with the young people you work with?
Well, mentorship is a huge part. excuse me. It's a huge part of our program, and the success of our program is providing somebody who has been through a similar background, has a similar history, who has in many ways become successful, whether they're a crew leader or a staff person on our in our program, and can relate with those young people. Sometimes all it takes is just for as a young person being able to see that there are other opportunities that we didn't think of. I mean, I know when I was a young person, I was told college, college, college. Mm-hmm. I went to college, got a degree in English, and then I got into the conservation field. Mm-hmm. And if I would have had somebody who had been through in the conservation field kind of letting me know that this is an opportunity, I can go down this path, I would have been much more focused in school, probably gotten a degree that was relevant to the field I'm in, or just, you know, known that I could have gone and gotten a job digging in the dirt, which is all I really wanted to do anyways. But that mentorship piece is critical. And to the caller's question around opportunities for folks that are oftentimes overlooked, I mean, there's so many overlooked populations that need these types of programs and opportunities. We partner with an organization in the South Valley called La Placita Institute, and they work with a population they call the most vulnerable of the vulnerable. It's young people who are battling drug addiction, who are trying to get out of gang affiliation, who are coming back from the juvenile prison complex. And so they're trying to provide opportunities for them. Refugees, you know, there are tons of populations that need these opportunities. So I think it's critical that we create programming that that addresses those and offers opportunities to those populations. We have another conservation corps based here in Albuquerque called Rocky Mountain Youth Corps. They're not our program. They're a sister program, but they offer American Sign Language programs. So they have crews that are all communicating through American Sign Language, and they, you know, they have the same opportunities as anybody else to go out and build trails and do conservation work and work in these public lands and public spaces. So I think identifying, you know, those oftentimes overlooked groups of people and creating programming that is tailored, is specific to their needs is critical.
That's great to know. And we will list all these resources, La Placita Institute, Rocky Mountain Youth Corps, on our website, KUNM.org, after the show. I want to take a listener call. Court is calling from Albuquerque. Good morning, Court. What would you like to add?
I'd like to add that, one, I'd like to back up everything that everyone has said so far and point out my own personal experience back in the 1980s. I was a academically good student, but I had opportunities to out away from school, outside of school, because it wasn't even offered in school, to one was welding, the other was a farrier opportunity, shoeing horses. And I ended up not taking advantage of those situations because of teachers who said, where is the art in that? And as a teacher now, I understand, and considering the population I teach, that there's art in everything, and that young people can pursue their avenues and even if they don't have dreams, they can pursue something and then understand, yes, this is a dream. This is a really good thing to do. You know, everyone you've had on, I think, has bolstered this point. But our education system is still kind of geared toward people, students excelling academically and not really focused on what really they can accomplish themselves and different pathways they can take. It would be good if we really had a serious academic pathway toward vocational education. Part of the reason it's disappeared in a lot of smaller school districts is that, and larger ones is that it's expensive. But on the other hand, it's like we're kind of shooting ourselves in our own feet by not really pursuing these avenues like they do in Europe, where, you know, if this is what you want to do, we're going to facilitate that. We're going to make sure this happens.
Absolutely. Court, thank you so much for that comment. Thanks for calling in. Glenn is calling from Jemez Springs. Glenn, what would you like to add?
Hi. I will piggyback on what was just said. I'm heading into my 75th year, and I look back at four careers that I had, Lutheran ministry, social work, teaching, and finally, and people kind of laugh at this since I have a doctorate, truck driving, Greyhound school buses. I would encourage people not to allow the system to say, find one career and stick with it till you retire. I mean, let your spirit guide you from wherever you start to wherever you keep going. There's so many opportunities out there. 25 years of different schooling was fine for me, but in the end, again, you know, just be open to possibilities. Life, it's full of options. So there's my comment.
Thank you so much for that, Glenn. And Jackie from Santa Fe. Jackie, good morning. You're on the air.
The Santa Fe Opera's Young Technicians Program, which is a program that offers workshops to high school students to introduce them to working with the professional staff at the opera in the areas of costuming, paint shop, scenic shop, props. And I think that I know there are other arts organizations that offer internships that provide students with this opportunity to work or at least experience the professional work world and maybe transference of skills. This year we were able to work with the ECO, which is Early College Opportunities, the welding students, and they worked on welding, helping to weld in the scene shop the deck that will be used, the platform that will be used for the deck for this, or this, basically the rake stage for the opera Jennifer. So some of these things can actually show the students that their training may, they may be able to apply to theater, film, the world of Disney, all of that which exists, and of course opera, to become a master carpenter in that realm as opposed to necessarily other places where they can use their carpentry skills. So I encourage the schools also to look into these programs that are offered by arts organizations. I know the Lenzik offers a wonderful technical internship, too. I'm not sure if I had mentioned that. So I think there are opportunities to get the kids seeing how this functions in the world and how the skills that they're getting can be applied in multiple ways.
Thank you so much for that, Jackie, and we will put that information on our website, KUNM.org, as well on the web post for this show. We have so many callers. I love it. Ray is calling from a local plumbing training center. Good morning, Ray.
Good morning, ma'am. How are you doing?
Good. What would you like to add to the discussion?
Well, I'd like to just say that for the most part, a lot of people have this stigma about the trades being low-paying. The schools, like many of your callers have already said, many of the schools are geared towards college only. But I think that that mentality is starting to shift with the governor pushing for apprenticeships. We're now trying to get some pre-apprenticeships put into the high schools. But take for instance, our local, we train plumbers, pipe fitters, welders, and HVAC technicians. And, you know, I start out apprentices here with no experience at all, no tools, no nothing, and I'm starting them out close to $15 an hour. And after a five-year apprenticeship, they'll be making somewhere in the range of about $30 to $31 an hour doing light commercial and heavy industrial plumbing and pipe fitting and welding. And then we also offer benefits that a lot of companies you have to pay extra for, and it's provided they get two retirement plans. They get a pension plan, which is almost unheard of anymore, and a 401k. They get a Cadillac insurance plan with very, very low deductibles, vision, health. I mean, it's just there's a lot of opportunities to make some really good money.
Ray, how can people find you if they're interested in all those great things you're describing?
What's that now?
How can people find your program, your apprenticeship program?
Well, they can just look us up on the web and just go to UA Local 412. They can give me a call at 505-256-9257. We have a lot of people that try to get into our program, and well, the next time we'll be handing out applications will be June 7th between noon and 4:30.
All right, Ray, thank you so much for that call. And on the line, we have Vincent Hesch, who administers the Machinist Apprentice Program at Los Alamos National Lab. Good morning, Vincent.
Hello, Hannah.
Hi, thanks for being with us. So we just heard about one apprenticeship program. Yours is a little bit unique, right, in that it is mastery-based instead of time-based. Will you tell us about that?
That's right. Traditional apprentice programs have all been time-based. 8,000 hour, 10,000 hour are some common numbers that have been used. But Los Alamos National Lab has transitioned our machinist apprentice program to a skills-based program. Once an apprentice proves he does have a skill set, he moves on and starts learning the next skill set. So it doesn't take him 8,000 or 10,000 hours to complete the program. He needs enough time to learn at his own pace all of these skills that he is required to learn.
And these are good paying jobs, right? I mean, first of all, what is a machinist? And then how are they set up? I mean, what's their pay like?
Oh, in our apprentice program, these kids come in at a starting wage of $41,800 an hour. That's $20 an hour, $41,812 per year. As they move into the second module, they get a $2 raise, another $2 raise, and into their third and fourth modules. When they graduate as a journeyman, they are being paid $59,000 per year.
And what is being a machinist involve? Like, what kinds of skills?
Very good eye-hand coordination, some math skills, some artistry. What we do is fabricate precision components, and what I mean by that is these are not items that can be measured with a tape measure. We use high-precision measurement instruments. We do have machines that we use. That's why we're called machinists. But we shape metal, mostly metal, into useful components. Here at the laboratory, we make a lot of experimental hardware.
All right. And we will put the link to that program on our website as well. Vincent Hesch, thank you so much for your time this morning.
All right, Anna. Nice to talk to you.
Thanks. And one more caller before we have to end the program. Adrian is calling from Albuquerque. Adrian, just about 30 seconds.
Yes. Well, thank you so very much for receiving my call. I just wanted to comment about what was shared regarding refugees and recognizing perhaps their linguistic and cultural skills as barriers. Just thinking about even here in New Mexico, how we have multicultural, multilinguistic individuals. I can think, for example, in the Navajo Nation, the Diné speakers, and how, you know, being involved with CTE and perhaps becoming an EMT would help so much and would give so much back to the community to be able to interact with elders, our students here in Albuquerque and different parts of New Mexico who are Spanish speakers as well, being able to utilize those linguistic and cultural assets to really support the skill set that they bring into whatever career that they choose, and to recognize that as a definite asset and not a barrier.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for that comment, Adrian. And we are out of time for today. Thank you so much to our guests, Vincent Hesch, Esteban Rico Ramirez, Chaz Robles, Jessica Nojek, and Cheryl Williams Stapleton. And thank you to everyone who called in. The conversation does not have to end here. You can comment on our Facebook page, tag us on Twitter with the hashtag #LetsTalkNM, or email us at letstalk@kunm.org. We do check that email. If you missed part of today's show, you can listen on kunm.org or subscribe to our podcast via iTunes. Next time on Let's Talk New Mexico, we're talking efforts to ban single-use plastics. That's next Thursday morning at 8. Our engineer is Marino Spencer. Celia Rainey live tweeted the show. Kaveh Movahed screened your calls this morning. May Ortega produced the show today. And Elaine Baumgartel is our executive producer. I'm Hannah Colton. This is Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM.